Our third case this morning is number 172107, Imperium IP Holdings v. Samsung. Okay, Mr. Hallwood-Freymeyer.
May it please the Court. If the panel simply affirms on the two board decisions that declared unpatentable the claims of the 029 and the 290, that would leave just the 884. I'd like to focus my argument this morning on the jury's finding with respect to the 884. I'd like to start by emphasizing the instructional error, because I think at the very least, the Court is going to have to vacate and remand for a new trial, because the Court instructed the jury incorrectly, and this is at A60, is just a quote from the instruction to the jury, Samsung must prove by clear and convincing evidence that prior art must enable a PCETA to make the invention without undue experimentation. That is precisely the opposite.
Even if that's wrong, does it matter when Imperium did not even debate whether or not the prior art was enabled?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Because, well, first of all, I want to say that when we're talking about shifting the burden of proof from one party to another, that is almost per se prejudicial error. And in fact, the Fifth Circuit
But if there's
has
nothing
said that.
To prove, that's what I'm trying to understand.
Well, Your Honor, because this instruction came at the very end and was unexpected, because it is the opposite of what circuit law is on this, that there is a presumption of enablement, we had not put in any testimony about enablement. In fact, Dr. Nykerk didn't say anything with respect to the without undue experimentation.
Are you saying you
element.
Didn't have notice in advance of what the jury instructions were going to be?
No, Your Honor. It was after our case was already put in that we learned that, because it was not part of the proposed instructions, the Court said, I'm going to give an instruction.
But did you have a jury conference?
There was
jury
a jury conference, yes.
And it was at the jury. Did you explain that issue to the judge?
Well, the jury conference under this judge's practice is off the record. When the record was put on, we objected and we explained this is error. And there's no question, there's been no argument that the challenge was not preserved.
But on the record or off the record, did you explain to the judge that not only do you think it's legal error, but if in fact you gave that instruction, that you would have tried your case differently?
Your Honor, I was not
you
at the trial, so I don't know the extent of the explanation, but it is clear that we preserved the argument that this was error.
Can I just address this a little bit? It seems to me the extremely limited expert testimony by, is it Dr. Wright on the
yes.
other side, about this, more or less might have been understood by the jury to make an enablement point.
I think
and,
right.
and they come back and they say in their brief, we absolutely said we don't make an enablement. So did Imperium say to the jury, we are not contesting enablement?
No, Your Honor. They acknowledge that they didn't contest it in the sense that this court's precedent, because the prior art is presumed to be enabled, says that the patentee has to come forward with persuasive evidence,
okay.
and they acknowledge
right,
that they
so
didn't
let me,
do
let
that.
Let me try to state my point. It seems to me you have an awfully good start for this is not harmless in what Dr. Wright said.
Yes.
Possibly that might be overcome. Had they said and stood up in front of the jury and said, by the way, as to Johnson, is that the,
yes.
the reference? As to Johnson, we are not disputing that it, if it anticipates, it's an enabled anticipation.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
They
said it to the judge in the post-trial motions, right?
In the post-trial motions, they say we didn't contest it. But that's in the post-trial motions. They didn't say that to the jury. To the jury, as Your Honor notes, Dr. Wright's testimony, and I want to get to this because I don't think he touched Dr. Nykerk's testimony on the substance, but the only thing that he would have been thought by the jury to be saying
Johnson doesn't show how
Johnson
to do it.
Johnson doesn't show how to do it, which right. would have sounded like enablement. It would have sounded like the without undue experimentation. And again, Dr. Nykerk didn't address it because we were entitled to the presumption.
But so, in closing arguments, didn't you say that it's not in dispute and no one objected to that?
In closing argument, we said that it was enabled, but that's not evidence.
And you said it's not in dispute that it's enabled, and the other side didn't rebut that in their closing.
This is
I'm just trying to understand
argument.
What was said to the jury. Tell me, is it true that you said to the jury there's no dispute?
He said it's not disputed, Your Honor, but I may be wrong about that. I know that he said that it's enabled, but that is not evidence. And the judge would have instructed the jury that lawyer argument is not evidence. So there was no evidence on this. The problem, and again, there's Fifth Circuit law. There's the Castillo versus Givens case. It's at 704 F second 181. It's a 1983 case that says that when you put the burden of persuasion on the wrong party, that is always of major importance. So when it wasn't just switching the burden, it was switching the burden to Samsung to prove by clear and convincing evidence. And of course, the standard under Hartzell is whether it could have affected the jury's verdict. When we were put the burden to prove enablement by clear and convincing evidence, and you hadn't heard our expert testify about this, and then a lawyer gets up and says it, that's not clear and convincing evidence. It's not evidence at all. It's certainly not clear and convincing evidence. And what the judge doesn't grapple with this at all, because in the order, the judge actually mischaracterizes the Hartzell standard. He says that we have to show that it must have affected the jury's verdict.
Since the time is short, yes. Can I ask you to talk about your potentially case dispositive Johnson,
yes.
The evidence and this record from a witness whose credibility was not actually touched under Fifth Circuit
not,
law had to be accepted as establishing anticipation?
That's right, Your Honor. And that's both this court's law and Fifth Circuit law, that if the expert's testimony is not contested, then the jury can't discredit it, because if it's technical in nature.
So the question is whether it was contested.
Well, we've laid out where Dr. Nykerk in the claim chart on pages 21 to 23 of our brief, where Dr. Nykerk hit each of the limitations.
I don't think anybody's disputing. Disputing that his testimony said that all the limitations were satisfied.
And so when Dr. Wright testified, all he said with respect to sort of dismissing Johnson as well, it's not that much, it's with small part of a bigger patent.
And it uses different terminology.
Uses different terminology, again, irrelevant. He says, well, there's one paragraph that even mentions Flickr. That's irrelevant too. In that paragraph, there's that little figure that goes along with it. Dr. Nykerk showed you that little figure. But that one paragraph of seven sentences, it just talks about you can average light over one cycle over two cycles of the light variation. Paragraph 16 says that. That confirms what Dr. Nykerk said, that paragraph 16 says you can vary it over one or two integer multiples. But Dr. Nykerk didn't rely on paragraph 16.
I think the question is here, with respect to Dr. Wright's testimony, there are two arguments that are made as to what he said. Your argument is that he never addressed setting and maintenance.
Right.
And their argument is that in that one sentence, I guess, that he did address setting and maintenance.
But Your Honor, at most, what he is talking about is paragraph 16. But notably, Dr. Nykerk's testimony about the setting and maintaining limitations was drawn from figure 13. And this is at 11891. He's describing figure 13. He says, when you reach a critical level of dimness, it becomes flat. So that's one cycle section of shutter speed is maintained, one period of the flicker flashing period. And then when it reaches another critical level of intensity, it jumps up. It moves straight up to another maintained shutter speed or integration time of two cycles. So that's where we see adjusting while maintaining at one cycle, and then adjust directly to two cycles. He's talking about figure 13. Again, with respect to claim one, when he talks about the setting, he says, yes, this is on 11899. You can see that quickly with figure 13, where the shutter speed is flat in the region labeled one cycle. That's an integer multiple of the flicker setting. And then on 11900, again, with respect to adjusting while maintaining. Adjusting while maintaining. It's very easily seen in figure 13. That's where shutter speed is held. It's maintained at one cycle. Then it jumps and is adjusted to two cycles. This is on page 20 of the blue brief, figure 13. It is evident in figure 13, and Dr. Wright never touches that because he doesn't discuss Dr. Nykerk's testimony about figure 13. He only says, with respect to paragraph in column 16, he confirms what Dr. Nykerk said, which is explicit in that text, that you can average the integration time over one or two cycles. An integral multiple is paragraph 16 says, of the periodic intensity of the fluorescent light to eliminate flicker. That's explicitly what it says. He acknowledges what it says. Dr. Nykerk referenced what it says, but he didn't rely on that for those limitations that they say are missing. He relied on figure 13. Dr. Wright says nothing about figure 13.
What about the argument that in cross-examination they brought out that he had a potential conflict or bias because he knew the inventors of Johnson? What about the fact that they argued that a lot of the statements that your expert were making had holes in them? I mean, if that's true, a jury could simply disregard an expert.
But it's not true, Your Honor. They identify that Dr. Nykerk acknowledged that Johnson doesn't use the term integration time. But Dr. Nykerk did testify, and this is at 11890, that integration time and shutter speed are the same. And in fact, it's notable that Dr. Wright, and this is at A12228, also says shutter speed. I mean integration time. They're the same thing. There's nothing. There is no ipsissimus verbis test. Johnson doesn't have to use the term that the 884 uses to describe shutter speed if it's describing the same concept. And there is no testimony that he didn't. And the cross-examination did not establish that he didn't.
Well, was there, I think I had understood Judge O'Malley to be asking, maybe I misunderstood, about whether there was certain kind of credibility challenges to your expert, independent of the specific things he said about Johnson.
Simply establishing that the witness knew of one of the inventors doesn't establish that there is any bias there. What he testified to are what the disclosures of Johnson show. And when Dr. Wright was asked,
so his relationship with the inventor of Johnson, you can see that that came out.
He acknowledged it himself. Yes, he did. That he had known him. He was a student at University of Texas.
And were there any other credibility challenges to his testimony?
No, Your Honor. I think the key is that it's not contested that Dr. Nykerk touched on all of the limitations, and that what they have pointed to as undermining that actually confirms the one thing that Dr. Nykerk relied on with respect to column 16, and it doesn't touch what he said about figure 13, which is where he talked about the two limitations that they've suggested Wright undermined. But I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Fish.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I was at the trial, and I'd like to begin by answering some of the questions that have gone unanswered this morning. The first relates to the introduction of the enablement jury instruction. That occurred after the jury charge conference. This was not anything that was brought up at the jury charge conference. Therefore, the sum total of Samsung's objection to it can be found on A12312
with
a single sentence that it's contrary to law.
What's the matter with the objection?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What's the matter with the objection?
What's the matter with the objection is that it doesn't identify what their absolute issue is. They simply say that statement is contrary to law. The statement is not contrary to law.
How do you say it's not contrary to law?
How is it not? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yeah, how is it not contrary to law?
Because it's not contrary to law because the fundamental statement that there must be enablement exists. That exists. What Samsung is really asking for is a second sentence afterward, Your Honor, that says, but in the case of a United States patent, that is presumed to be enabled.
It's not just that there's something missing in the instruction. The instruction misstates the law by saying that they have to prove enablement by clear and convincing evidence. That's what the instruction said, didn't it?
I disagree, Your Honor, but if the court is of the assumption that that is a misstatement.
You disagree that said that?
If the court is of the assumption.
Where do we find the instruction?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Where's the instruction in the appendix?
I'm confused by the question,
sir. Do you disagree that the court said they had to prove it by clear and convincing evidence, or do you disagree that that matters?
No, I believe that they have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the invention is invalid.
Yeah, but that's not what the question was.
But they have to do it with something that's enabled.
Where's the instruction that we're talking about?
Do you have a joint appendix citation that we can look at and let's read the words together?
Yes, Your Honor.
I understood your brief.
A12410.
Which volume is this? A12437.
Your Honor, it is quoted by the court in its decision on A60. It sets out a quote citing the docket number and pages at the bottom of A60 for the court's convenience.
Thank you.
Okay, it says Samsung must prove by clear and convincing evidence that this single item of prior art must enable, right?
Correct, Your Honor, that's what it says. But I believe
that's wrong, isn't it?
If the court is of the assumption
that is that wrong or not?
I disagree that it's wrong, Your Honor.
I believe that wrong.
I believe that because the obligation for the proof is on the clear and convincing component. That's where their burden rests. That to prove by clear and convincing evidence, they must use something that is enabled. Not that they must prove that it's enabled, they must use something that is enabled. But I understand, Your Honor, if the court disagrees, obviously we move to the Z4 analysis we've heard about already. Now, one thing to note, of course, is that Samsung in its briefing glosses over the first prong of the Z4 analysis. The very significant that the charge as a whole creates substantial and ineradicable doubt as to how the jury was instructed. This is one component of a 26-page jury charge. One very small piece that was not... Yes, Your Honor.
I would like to pass that and go to a question that we discussed with your friend on the other side, and at least I was not sure. In the record, and I don't think this is actually, I'm not sure whether it's in the joint appendix, and I want you to focus on the closing argument. There was a question about whether counsel for Samsung said enablement of Johnson is not an issue and that's undisputed. Was that statement made?
Yes, in fact, I was at the close. I gave the close.
Do you have the transcript in front of you?
He said, Johnson gives extensive details on how to build the system. You could build it easily. You could enable it. Both Johnson and Hashimoto are issued patents. The patent examiner considered them enabled. There's no question about that. They're anticipatory references.
So that doesn't really say that it's undisputed between the parties. It says there's no question that the examiner thought that they were enabled.
And there's no question that that was the only evidence or indication that the jury had. Your Honor had referenced earlier testimony from Dr. Wright as indicating that he was addressing enablement, and he was not. Enablement is not part of any part of Dr. Wright's expert report. That excerpt that Samsung has talked about here, Your Honor, was part of a larger continuum of a discussion about the 884 patent and the elements of each of the pieces of the prior art. not whether the prior art was enabled itself. Had that been a discussion about the prior art being enabled, Samsung could have.
Even the trial court pointed to Dr. Wright's testimony and specifically pointed out that Dr. Wright testified that although Johnson mentions the concept of flickerless mode, it does not explain how to achieve this mode. How does that not relate to enablement?
Because the broader context at that point in time, Your Honor, is about the missing elements as it relates to the 884 patent, not to enablement. Indeed, enablement has never been an issue in this case. At no point in time, it wasn't mentioned in the opening by either party. It wasn't mentioned in the close by me at all. Dr. Wright doesn't use the word enablement. His expert report doesn't include the concept of enablement. Had that been a discussion of enablement as it's being cast today by Samsung, Samsung would have stood up. It would have objected to Dr. Wright speaking outside the scope of his expert report. It would have asked for a clarification to the jury on the issue. It would have undoubtedly asked to strike that portion of his testimony. None of that happened. The appellate attorneys are casting this as something related to enablement as a concept. But the trial attorneys at the time understood Phil well in the broader concept that he was speaking directly.
But do I understand that the sequence of events was that at the time that testimony occurred, they didn't have any idea that there was going to be an instruction of the sort that actually ended up being given. So why would they stand up and say, there is no enablement issue? It was, they should have rightly assumed at that point that there wasn't going to be an instruction like this, right?
Because, Your Honor, at that point in time, Dr. Wright wasn't speaking to enablement. He was speaking to the idea of
the question the question is how the jury might have understood him to have been speaking once the judge said what the judge said in the instruction by adding it later in time.
That presupposes that they appreciate that what he has just talked about is enablement. There has been no dots connected, not by Imperium, not by Imperium's witness. There has been no dots connected to that statement and anything relating to this concept of enablement, which they hear for the first time.
Why didn't you support Samsung's objection when they said, objection, you're putting the burden on the wrong party and there is no issue of enablement here? Why didn't you stand up and say, Your Honor, we're not contesting enablement?
Because their objection wasn't that, Your Honor. They said it was contrary to law. And as I've indicated, I don't believe that that statement was contrary to law. Now, I understand that the court
You like the instruction.
I understand, Your Honor, that...
You like the instruction. You thought the instruction was the right thing to do.
No, Your Honor.
No?
No, it wasn't an issue for us, one way or the other. We didn't bring in... No, you're implying nefarious actions that didn't exist, Your Honor. No. And that brings us to Z4, which is what really did this have as an impact?
Would you mind, since time is short, getting to the other aspect of the 8.4 argument, namely that in the single page in the transcript, I guess it's, 12.218, where Dr. Wright addresses the Johnson reference. How does that create a issue as to which the jury could reasonably find lack of anticipation?
Of course, Your Honor, Dr. Wright speaks in the ultimate conclusion to the idea that nothing he has seen or heard during the trial has changed his view about the validity of the patents. That conclusion is sufficient. That is enough, but it's even more than enough because the burden continues to rest the entire time with Samsung. And contrary to what was said about the cross-examination, at A11994, Dr. Nykerk is in fact cross-examined. And not just about this, he's cross-examined multiple times.
Are you agreeing that Dr. Wright didn't rebut the testimony?
I'm sorry.
Are you agreeing that Dr. Wright did not address or rebut Dr. Nykerk's testimony about Johnson?
No, he did, Your Honor. He did it twice. He did it by indicating that there was a difference in language between the two. And although counsel for the other side has indicated that that's not a difference at all, the answer is that's absolutely what the case is about, understanding the relationship between the prior art and the claim language. They're not the same, and he identified that.
Right.
He also
I'm sorry, but you just shifted to the prior art versus the claims on the specific point of whether, what is it called, integration time, is that
correct,
the phrase,
Your Honor.
Is or is not the same as the other two terms, shutter, some. Did you have evidence that said, oh, those are actually quite different?
Dr. Wright's testimony is they're not the same, Your Honor.
Point me to where Dr. Wright said those are, in fact, different. Those have different meanings.
Your Honor, I'm going to go look for it, but I believe it's A12221.
Oh, that's the same page. But he didn't say that they were. He just said that that Johnson didn't use the integration time terminology. He didn't say that that terminology has a substantively different meaning from the terminology that Johnson did use.
He doesn't need to say that, Your Honor. No, no. There are plenty of other bases, by the way, for which this jury could reach a conclusion that the burden had been met. The burden never shifts. It's not that the evidence is out there. And as Judge O'Malley indicated, there is other cross-examination factors involved in here as well.
All right, what are those? I see you reference in the brief to that he happened to know, or he did know, the Johnson inventors. What else?
Well, any way he testifies, Your Honor, the demeanor he undertakes in answering the questions, the approach he takes when positing his different opinions, all of that, along with the other cross-examination questions, can be used as a corpus for the jurors to understand the witness's credibility.
But you didn't really point us to anything like that. You didn't say, look how obvious it is that he was avoiding a question, or look how he, you know, was self-contradictory, or look how he admitted that he didn't have expertise in a particular area. Those are the kinds of things that usually we see when we say the jury had the right to not believe him at all, even in the absence of contrary testimony. So what do you point us to?
Your Honor, there are a number of different pieces of art that were testified to during that entire cross-examination. The responses to any of those could have implicated the veracity of Dr. Nykerk's testimony. We're seeking to crack open the jury deliberation process here by focusing on the very specific piece of art, when in fact it's the totality of his cross-examination that defines him as a witness and his credibility as a witness. And that needs to remain primary. That the Star Scientific case makes it clear that the jurors are permitted to evaluate and weigh each witness separately and their credibility separately. There is no obligation that they adopt wholesale everything he says. He was challenged. He was challenged as a witness. He was challenged on these issues. Those are bases upon which a credible juror, a legitimate juror, a juror focused on the evidence, can in fact reach a conclusion that Dr. Nykerk was inaccurate. Dr. Nykerk's position was addressed multiple times. Your Honor, I see have 1 minute left. May I address briefly, if the court will permit, one of Imperium's cross-appeal issues? I'm happy to continue talking about the issues.
You have a minute left. You can do whatever you want.
Your Honors, with respect to the post-trial running royalty, that is an issue of first impression for this court. The impact of a post-grant proceeding that has been incompleted on the presumption of validity during a reasonable royalty negotiation. I ask that this court evaluate whether it wants to include the questions of validity or a possible attack on validity during those components of the negotiation. What has happened here, based on what the lower court has done, is that it has indicated that it is including as a factor mitigating against Imperium's royalty rate the ongoing IPR of the 029 patent. Not only does it apply that as a discount factor to the 029 patent in the hypothetical negotiation, it also applies it to the 884 patent, which of course was not the subject of the IPR.
Okay,
now this is a...
Mr. Fish, we're out of time. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor? We're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Very quickly, Your Honor, if I could, first on the prejudicial nature of shifting the burden from one party to another. at best, because we had not addressed it in our opening. Dr. Wright certainly made some noises that the jury might have thought went to enablement. We might have had a jury in equipoise. This instruction didn't just shift the burden from them to us. It said that we bore the burden by clear and convincing evidence. The standard is, if it could have affected the outcome, there has to be a new trial. The court cannot know that it did not affect the outcome on that record. In terms of the actual JMAL motion, the Webster case, which we cite in the yellow brief, I can pull this up. This is a Fifth Circuit case. It's cited at page 4. Stands for the proposition that when juries must decide, they may decide what weight to give expert witnesses, they are not at liberty to disregard the uncontradicted, unimpeached testimony of an expert witness where the testimony bears on technical questions beyond the competence of the determination.
What's your response to Mr. Fish's argument that we can't assess that in terms of what their credibility assessment might have been unless we look at all of his testimony as a whole? There could have been other things he said with respect to the other patents that the jury just felt were not credible, or that reduced his credibility with respect to anything he said.
Your Honor, I believe that rule that you've articulated, if that's the rule, means that Webster means nothing. Because in every trial, the party that won the victory can say, well, we don't know what the jury, why the jury didn't credit them. They may have felt that their demeanor was somehow offensive. Unless you can point to something that impeached or contradicted the expert's testimony, the jury is just not free to disregard it. But if you were to say that it could be anything that
they
found
about. But in Webster, there was really only one issue that the expert was talking about. It's not a question of where he was discussing multiple patents and that his credibility with respect to those other patents might have affected his credibility here.
Your Honor, they have pointed to nothing other than the simple fact that Dr. Nykerk knew of one of the many inventors on the Johnson patent, and that is not a basis for bias.
Knew of or knew? Knew him personally?
Knew him.
Knew him. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and I think we're out of time.
Thank you very much.
Okay.